From the bizarre world of the paranormal to the sinister secrets of the U.S. government, the Black Vault has become known worldwide as the premier spot for anything and everything conspiracy. Now, join me, John Greenwald Jr., as we dive into the research together in hopes to decipher these mysteries. This is the Black Vault Radio. That's right, everybody. This is the Black Vault Radio. I am your host, John Greenwald Jr. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. We're wrapping up this week with Mr. Nick Redfern, an unbelievable researcher and investigator who has just come out with a new book all about FBI files and government files on celebrities. Going to air all those Hollywood dirty laundry stories, and he is coming up to tell us a little bit about that. You obviously know Nick's name also from the UFO phenomenon research, and he's done a lot of work with U.S. government and the U.K. government under the Freedom of Information Act, the U.K.'s equivalent to the Freedom of Information Act, and even prior to that, what is called the 30-year rule. So make sure you stay tuned for Nick. On the Black Vault, I am happy to say, is a brand new section that I have been wanting to launch for quite some time. And this is all about streaming video. There's streaming videos on there from old nuclear weapons tests, all declassified from the Department of Energy. There are aircraft and helicopter videos. Old DOD, old Department of Defense, even old War Department documentaries that talk about all of these stories from World War II all the way to Vietnam and beyond. And you have to go on there. There are hours and hours and hours of videos on the Black Vault now. It is a huge section, which is really kind of blowing my mind on how many people are really downloading these things and what it's doing to my server and how much bandwidth is going on. But make sure you check it out. Some are brand new. I just put on in the last 36 hours or so. And it's even beyond declassified videos from the U.S. government. Those are fascinating enough, but I realize that a lot of you guys want to see even more than that because it's available out there on the internet. And a lot of times, videos, at least the interesting ones, are very hard to find. So what I'm trying to do is really pull together the most informative, whether it be documentary or film clip or so on. And namely, I do want to point out a couple to you that may be of interest, one of which is the 9/11 category. The 9/11 category, you know, it's surprisingly not the easiest thing to find some of this video footage of 9/11. You see the most common shots, but one of the videos I have is over an hour long, and somebody put in their VHS, pressed record, and recorded for, you know, well over an hour of all the news broadcasts, what happened on 9/11. It's a very cool historical narrative, mainly because it's just unedited. That's actually getting a lot of press and links from external sites because people want to see that. Alex Jones, for all you conspiracy fans out there, Alex Jones' documentary 9/11, The Road to Tyranny, that's online. You can view that. I think that's about a two-hour documentary as far as I know. Secret Evil of 9/11, hey, there's a lot of conspiracy stuff for you guys because, let's face it, a lot of you love it. I personally, I don't buy it. You know my views on the 9/11 conspiracy because that leads me to one of the other popular videos that I loved and put up and profiled. This is a 9/11 street conspiracy theorist, and when I say that, he's the one picketing out on the either White House lawn or wherever he is. This is a short video clip of somebody actually with the knowledge, the scientific knowledge about building demolition and so on, countering and challenging this conspiracy theorist and what he was trying to say on the streets, and you can see the reaction. So really, my point I got from the conspiracy to the not conspiracy for you. One other, right before we go to break and bring on Nick, one other category from the Iraqi front lines. This, you got to check it out. There's six clips right now. They're amazing footage shot home video style by the brave men and women overseas, right there on the Iraqi front lines, of some amazing, amazing events. One, a bulletproof piece of glass saved a soldier's life from a sniper's bullet, all caught on camera. It's fascinating. Go check it out. www.theblackvault.com. Nick Redfern coming up right here on the Black Vault Radio. Stay tuned. welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I am your host, John Greenwald Jr., and my guest today is really, I think, in ufology, the definition of cool. I have the utmost respect for him. He's an unbelievable researcher, a fantastic investigator, and when I grow up, I want to be just like him. Nick, thank you so much for joining me here on the Black Vault Radio.
Hey, John, thanks for that. Although, I'm not sure I've even grown up myself yet. I don't think I have, so you've probably got a while to go yet.
Yes, well, I appreciate that, and you are, like I said, an unbelievable researcher. You've written many, many books on very much the topics I'm interested in, government documents and beyond. To name a couple, Strange Secrets, Real Government Files on the Unknown. You've written the FBI Files, the FBI's UFO Top Secrets Exposed, Three Men Seeking Monsters, A Covert Agenda, Cosmic Crashes, and to the best of my knowledge, you have a new one coming out. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, actually, I've got a new one out right now called Celebrity Secrets, which I guess is kind of a little bit of a departure for me because it deals with government conspiracies, formerly classified government files, but It delves into government files on the famous and the well-known from Hollywood rather than outer space, shall we say.
Right, right. Now, let me ask you, before we get into that, how did you get into researching celebrity secrets?
Well, basically what it was, I was doing a lot of investigations using the Freedom of Information Act for earlier books, one being Strange Secrets, and that was one book that took me to the National Archives on several occasions. And while I was going through some of the files at the archives, in speaking with some of the archivists there, they told me about how they had some of the military files on a number of well-known celebrities. For example, like Jimi Hendrix, they had his army files.
Oh, wow.
And also Jack Kerouac, the author, his Navy files as well. And so, you know, it then sort of opened my eyes to the fact that there weren't just the usual files everybody knew about, such as the FBI watching people like Frank Sinatra and Marilyn Monroe. You know, the ones we all know about because of ties with things like the Mafia and the mob and the Kennedys.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I began doing was, doing a lot of research really to see which people within the official world may have been of interest to the government and then just firing off blanket Freedom of Information requests. You know, I'm sure it's along the same lines as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, more often than not, it would come back, sorry, no files available. But, you know, for every 10 negative responses, there are perhaps two or three positive ones, to the point where I suppose over the course of about 18 months or so, I probably got somewhere in the region of 50 or 60 files.
Wow.
On various celebrities going back to the 40s to the present day. And as I said, some of those were the usual suspects, you know, Marilyn Monroe, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, you know, because they're all tied in, as I said, with the Kennedys, etc. But, you know, then to find out there are secret FBI files on people like Abbott and Costello.
Yes.
And John Denver, Rock Hudson, Rudolf Nureyev, John Wayne. You know, some of the people who you would imagine were the last people to be the subject of government files. So, you know, in some respects, it was as eye-opening as, in some cases, as amusing as the files were.
Now, did that surprise you when you found documents on many of these celebrities? I mean, did you expect that at all when you first started?
Well, you know, I think we need to look at sort of the climate when a lot of these files were put together. You know, anyone back in the 1950s who was sort of famous and mixing in various circles was investigated to a large extent by the FBI because J. Edgar Hoover, basically, in particular with John F. Kennedy, the former president, Hoover was really looking to get any dirt, scandal, and gossip that he could on Kennedy. And so anybody that the man mixed with was ripe for investigation by Hoover as well. Hence, as I said, the investigations into people like Marilyn Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, you had Hoover watching some of her friends in the Hollywood world as well. And also, of course, in the 50s, you had things like McCarthyism and, you know, the Reds under the bed scares. And again, a lot of actors in Hollywood, either secretly or openly, were sort of open to the idea of, you know, left-wing beliefs and communism and socialism. And so a lot of these people were investigated initially, at least for those reasons. But then when the FBI delved further, they found, for example, links with other issues, sort of drug running, prostitution, all sorts of weirdness. And that sent them off at a tangent. So sometimes one of the things I found was that the file or the investigation would start in one area, but then it would broaden in scope to cover lots of different things as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, for those that are listening and that aren't really in tune with the Freedom of Information Act or the Privacy Act, they may be asking themselves, well, how did Nick Redfern get a hold of this? Now, and obviously you use the Freedom of Information Act, as you said, but why are they airing these celebrity secrets? How can they release that?
Well, the way it works, John, is that if you apply for a file on someone who you can verify is deceased, you know, for example, Frank Sinatra or John Lennon, somebody like that, everybody knows they're deceased. All the FBI require in that case is some sort of proof that the person isn't alive anymore, like an obituary. And, of course, if it's a famous person, you know, that you're going to find plenty of obituaries. And so what happens is that if you can supply the FBI with firm evidence that the person's dead and you file, you know, a properly requested FOIA request, then really, unless there are issues like national security issues and privacy issues, medical issues maybe, they should release that file to you. Now, I've never had a denial at all of a celebrity file that hasn't been declassified to me. They've all been released in some fashion, but we do have this sort of more than liberal use of the black marker or the whiteout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on some files actually go back to the 1940s. For example, Errol Flynn, the swashbuckling actor of the 30s and 40s, I got hold of his FBI file, which is about 400 pages, and also got his file from the old Office of Strategic Services and a number of other wartime organizations. And there were huge, whole swathes of paper just blacked out, you know, 60 years on.
Why is that? Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, in the case of Errol Flynn, there have always been rumors that he was somehow linked in with the Nazis and may have been, if you like, sort of a full-on supporter, but at least sympathetic to their views.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are also other theories that that was just a front and that maybe he was somehow connected with Allied intelligence and was sort of worming his way in on their behalf. And I guess, you know, both angles or both theories could explain why 60 years on there's a reluctance to release some of this material. But there's no doubt that in the case of Errol Flynn, he did have a number of girlfriends who, as the files reveal, were Nazis, and he mixed with a number of German people. And of course, this was at the height of the Second World War. So it was inevitable, I think, that he would be investigated. But, you know, I find it more intriguing, not that he was so much investigated, but 60 years on, we're still not allowed to see some of the FBI's findings on what they found out about the man. You know, and I think you probably appreciate this as well, that probably a lot of the material that's blacked out is some of the more interesting material as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it is amazing, though, that here we are 60-plus years past that, and
yeah.
let's assume it was about the Nazi Party or some kind of connection there. We're 60 years after that. The Nazi Party, you know, I mean, you can argue it, but really doesn't exist in that fashion anymore. And why wouldn't they just say, okay, that's a secret that we can let out? I mean, maybe it is something more sinister that they don't want.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe in some respects, I mean, I'm not able to prove this, but I mean, I'll give you a classic example. The FBI file on John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI declassified a file, which is probably in the region of about 2 inches thick. Now, a number of deletions were made from that file, and a number of documents were actually withheld in their entirety. And when the FBI was pressed as to why this was the case, they said that some of these files originated with what they called an overseas intelligence agency. And it's been determined that this was almost certainly Britain's MI5, and that MI5 was secretly spying on John Lennon because of his peace activities and, you know, his being against the Vietnam War and so
mm-hmm.
on. And so what happened, I suspect, is that MI5 were investigating John Lennon back in England, and there have been rumors that maybe this surveillance of his activities wasn't entirely legal, with things like illegal wiretaps, that sort of thing, and that the FBI sat on this material and continues to sit on it, because if it releases it, it may well compromise what British intelligence was up to.
I see. That's a good point.
And so I think, you know, that possibly, in a lot of these files, it's not as black and white as we might think in terms of why the material is being withheld. There could be all manner of reasons that don't necessarily relate directly to the celebrity, or possibly, in the John Lennon case, to the FBI. But it may kind of open up a back door to something else.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent point. I've never thought of that.
Yeah, I think that could perhaps happen, you know, on more than one occasion.
Now, away from the blacked out material, give me a story that you were pretty surprised to read when you got it in the mail.
On the celebrities, you mean?
Yeah. Is there something that sticks out to you as being,
yeah,
whoa?
Yeah, there's a couple of interest. I mean, I like the, if you're going to write a book about celebrities, you know, and it's all secrets, you want juicy scandal.
And there's
plenty of that. For example, I mentioned there was an FBI file on Abbott and Costello. You know, people think, well, why on earth would sort of two 1940s Hollywood comedians be the subject of FBI files? And the file makes it very clear that Abbott and Costello, collectively between the two of them, possessed the largest collection of porno movies in Hollywood in the 1940s.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
And it talks about how when they were on tour that they were quite partial to a bit of a, as I put it, girl-on-girl action. And one of the other weird files is the FBI's file on John Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
John Wayne was a little bit different to a lot of the other celebrities that were being watched. Most of the Hollywood glitterati, if you like, that were being surveyed by J. Edgar Hoover, were sort of done so in a very disapproving eye, but John Wayne actually was a full-on supporter of the FBI and lent his weight to a lot of causes and publicity campaigns that the FBI was involved in. But one weird aspect of his file is a story from the 1950s, which the FBI dug into quite deeply, which suggested that John Wayne was somehow secretly funding an attempted revolution in Panama to overthrow the Panamanian government.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. And this is actually referenced in all the files. And, you know, to find a world-famous actor, you know, in the thick of this particular story was kind of unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was all denied by John Wayne, and he said his interest in the area was just related to just a normal business transaction. But the FBI, behind the scenes, delved into it quite deeply, and I'm not entirely sure, you know, they were fully convinced. And there are other files, for example, that are just, you know, just kind of bizarre files. For example, there's a file on the actor Rock Hudson. Rock Hudson died in 85 of AIDS, and he had lived a secret gay life. But the FBI found out back in the late 1950s that he was secretly gay, and they opened a huge file on him when it was determined in the mid 60s. Rumors were going around that he was going to play an FBI agent in a movie, and the FBI were like, "Oh my God, you know, we can't have a gay actor portraying one of our finest agents. What's the world going to think?"
That's,
you know, and it was, today we might kind of laugh at it, but back then, you know, the typewriters were thumping, and
wow.
And I think the strangest file of all, though, is that which was opened on the Kingsman song Louie Louie. Everybody knows the song Louie Louie, and
mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those that when you're at parties, more and more, the later and later it gets, the more and more difficult it gets to understand the lyrics. And what happened was that a member of the public contacted the Department of Justice in the late 50s after the song was released and said, you know, this song contains obscene lyrics and it's going to destroy and corrupt the youth of America.
Wow.
And I want the FBI to investigate. And the FBI actually did investigate. What they did, they went out and bought copies of the record and sent them to the FBI's technical laboratory. So you had this sort of somewhat surreal image of countless FBI agents sitting at their desks tapping the toes to Louie Louie, trying to understand the words to the song.
That's hysterical. From famous celebrities, Nick, I got to put you on hold. We're
okay.
Coming up to a break, but from famous celebrities to even songs, Nick has got the files for him. He's telling us all about it right here on the Black Vault Radio. You stay tuned. There's much more coming up with Nick Redfern right after this.
Fuck.
Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. We're talking to Nick Redfern all the way from Austin. Is it Austin, Texas? Is
Dallas. That where you're
from? Dallas, Texas.
Yeah.
From Dallas, Texas. And he's joining us talking about his new book, many celebrity secrets he's come out with. Just before the break, he told us of an FBI file about Louie Louie, which I love that song. And there's an FBI file about it. Go figure. Nick, what's amazing to me, and that I always really like to drive this home to anybody who really wants to listen, but to any of those who are very interested in finding out not only celebrity secrets, but anything to do with the United States military, United States government, they can use this tool called the Freedom of Information Act. Sometimes it's not easy, as you well know, as I know, and for those who have taken the plunge to try and use it, they probably know it's not the easiest thing to use, but it works. Do you agree?
Yeah, I would broadly agree with that, John. As you said, the Freedom of Information Act is a door to, or a tool to opening doors, but it's not, as a lot of people think or assume, that it's the magic key to everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Freedom of Information Act, as you know, has numerous jurisdictions and legislations to it that allow for the continued withholding of documents for reasons such as national security, personal privacy, health issues, a number of which, are quite understandable. I think the area where I have problems so much is how national security is defined, what mm-hmm. we should be allowed to see, because it genuinely might affect national security if it's released, or what somebody on the inside has decided they don't want to release, so let's conveniently say it affects national security. And
right.
then you find further down the line when something is released, it was actually withheld not to embarrass the agency or to disclose some sort of malpractice rather than, a legitimate national security concern.
Mm-hmm.
But you're quite right that pretty much anyone, and the surprising thing is that you don't have to be a U.S. citizen to file a Freedom of Information request with elements of the U.S. government. When I used to live in England, I regularly used to fire off requests to the CIA, the FBI, National Security Agency, and if material could be released, they'd send it to me. I mean, I'm just a member of the public with an interest in UFOs
mm-hmm.
and unsolved mysteries. But, I'm quite sure that from time to time, people under the guise of being innocent researchers like us have, possibly used the Freedom of Information Act request to try and get hold of files when, behind the scenes, they may be portraying themselves as innocent but working for, a foreign intelligence agency or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, possibly in today's post-9/11 world, certainly, I think probably a lot of background checks are probably undertaken on people who file these requests. But the process itself isn't really that taxing. I mean, it's just basically, of course, you need to know what you're going to file for. It's if you uncover a story or project name or somebody gives you data like that, then, you chase that down. That kind of has its hazards and its advantages. If somebody says, I was in the Air Force and, I was part of this UFO project called Project Triangle
mm-hmm.
as a hypothetical situation. So you file a request with the relevant agency. Now, on the one hand, if they've got files, maybe something might surface, or if they've got files and they think, well, hang on, somebody just tipped this guy off to the fact that that classified project exists, we need to bury down the hatches.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly what happens then is that your source of information vanishes. They're compromised because you've tipped the government off to the fact that an insider has told you about the project.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the unfortunate side effects of filing a request, is that you're actually informing the government that something that they're sitting on.
Someone let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's like a double-edged sword. But, I found, for the most part, if you word the request correctly and, you request it in the right manner and they understand what you're requesting it for, then, I haven't had that much trouble. I haven't had actually any trouble as such. I think it's just more the bureaucratic issue.
Yes, and frustration.
The frustration, the sometimes the amount of time that goes on. I well remember filing a Freedom of Information request that I think from beginning to end took about 3 years, including the appeals.
I only giggle because I just got a response from one I sent over 7 years ago.
Wow.
In fact, my longest one, I have to look back at my records, but it was about funding for a biological agent that humans had not acquired immunity for. And that request is best of my recollection is going on 8.5 years.
I'm sure that one might go on a bit longer.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. But anyway, Nick Redfern, thank you for joining us on the Black Vault Radio. Thank you all for listening. Please stay tuned. There's much more coming up. We're at the bottom of the hour. Stay tuned for some cool music right here on theblackvault.com. Stay tuned.
You're listening to BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I am your host, John Greenwald Jr., joined today with Mr. Nick Redfern, an unbelievable researcher and investigator into U.S. government documents, obviously right up my alley, and right up yours as well for listening to the Black Vault Radio. And he also does a lot of research away from celebrity secrets, away from all that dirty laundry, into something that we've talked a lot about here on BVRN, the UFO subject. Nick, you've been made famous for many different reasons in this field, but one of which is your work in the UFO field as well. Give me a little bit of background and tell me a little bit about what you've kind of uncovered in the last few years.
Okay. Well, I've actually never seen a UFO myself, John, or had a sort of that personal life-changing experience. But why I got interested is that my father used to be in the British Royal Air Force. He worked on radar. And he was involved in several incidents in the early 50s where strange, fast-moving objects were tracked flying over the English Channel and the North Sea. And being the height of the Cold War, the first thought was, you know, wow, is this the Russians launching a sneak attack? So aircraft were inevitably scrambled from a nearby Air Force base, and pilots reported seeing these weird glowing lights in the distance that, as they closed in on them, the lights would seemed to zip in front and behind the aircraft as if playing a game of cat and mouse, almost to the point where, or literally to the point, I should say, eventually the air crews were forced to return to base because they were just running low on fuel. Well, everybody was sworn to secrecy, told not to talk about it with the family, friends, media, certainly not. And my dad didn't say anything until about late 1970s, something like that, when he told me the story. And I was just, you know, just a young kid at the time and sort of wide-eyed at these disclosures, etc., and hadn't really given the subject much thought until then. And as time went on, you know, I'd begin subscribing to newsletters, magazines, and buying books on the subject, and then doing a few book reviews for, you know, the occasional magazine or an article here and there, then got asked to do lectures, conferences, and it just sort of developed from there. But I think because of how I got interested in the subject, I realized that while there was a wealth of data out there from, you know, everybody from members of the public through police officers, through the military, even presidents who claim to have seen UFOs, I thought that the best approach to getting answers was probably to try and get those answers from the people that are most likely to be hiding the material, mm-hmm. if such material is being hidden. You know, the military and the government agencies and the intelligence world, these are the ones with access to computers, to radar, to aircraft, you know, to massive funding. And, you know, no disrespect to the average witness. I mean, anyone tomorrow could stumble across the truth about the UFO mystery. But I think if something's being hidden from us, and I believe it is, then we need to go to the most obvious source, that being the official world. And so I then began in Britain using something that was known as the old 30-year ruling, which meant that all documents had to be classified for a minimum of 30 years before they could even conceivably come up for declassification. And this was in the late 80s when I was predominantly doing this in England, and early 90s. And filed a lot of requests to try and get some of these 30-year ruling files released. And actually did get quite a few 50s and early 60s files containing a number of interesting military reports, pilot encounters, radar reports, vehicle interference cases, that sort of thing. And again, it opened my eyes to the fact that, yes, there were these investigations going on behind the scenes. Interestingly enough, what I found in the UK is something that's paralleled very closely in the US, namely that being the fact that in England, you had an organization at the Ministry of Defense building in Whitehall, London, very similar to the Project Blue Book in the US, in the sense that it was sort of a low-key, low-level structure that, you know, yes, investigated a few interesting reports, but wasn't sitting on anything really substantial. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, in the US, we found through the FOIA, et cetera, that agencies like the NSA, the CIA, the DIA, everybody and his brother was investigating these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the same in England. You had this sort of several tiers of investigation, several levels, with one particular department called the Provost and Security Services, which is basically the equivalent of the American Air Force Office of Special Investigations, and the Defense Intelligence Staff, who are kind of like the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency over here. They were all doing their investigations, and more importantly, in some cases, they weren't briefing each other on what they were up to. So you actually kind of had, as with over here, a distorted image of the official department and investigating things, but then finding, well, hang on a minute, they're saying one thing, but somebody else seems to have far more substantial data and far more resources at their disposal. So I think, again, and you probably found this as well, the Freedom of Information Act can open a lot of doors to what the government knows about UFOs, but frustratingly sometimes you realize that there's more going on. So you're actually left with more questions than answers
yes.
from some of these.
yeah, and usually one request will turn into about 32 by when it's all said and done. Now, in England, because you're obviously more in tune with this than many, is it the same as here where it's the right hand really doesn't know what the left hand is doing? Because that's one thing that I've found out that the Freedom of Information Act really shows, is that one agency and two different agencies are doing the exact same project or research, and they didn't know it at the time. I think when it first started with the mind control research, and when we first started as a researching it, trying to defend against it when the Soviets were looking into it, then we later realized, hey, look, we should pursue this as well, that at that time there were two agencies doing the exact same thing and they had no idea. Same over there?
Yeah, I'll give you a classic example of that. It relates to an unsolved mystery, if you like, and the paranormal, but it doesn't relate directly to UFOs. One of the things that I found that elements of the British government were particularly interested in was dowsing. You know, the idea of looking for, or conventional terms, you know, dowsing is sort of using divining rods to look for water underground.
Wow.
But in the Second World War, the British police force actually secretly employed the use of dowsers to try and find dead bodies buried under the rubble created by the bombings from Hitler. You know, the German aircraft would fly over London and some of the bigger cities, bomb them, you know, people would get buried under the rubble.
Mm-hmm.
And on a number of occasions, as the now declassified files have shown, the police secretly used people, and actually a number of police officers as well, who claimed to be able to douse and supposedly had some success in finding bodies. However, the British Royal Air Force, for reasons we're not entirely sure of, they also employed the use of dowsers and actually conducted a number of dowsing experiments to see if people could find things that they'd strategically buried on an old Air Force base. Now, as I said, we don't know the full reasons why this was going on, but it suggests, you know, they were seeing if people had some sort of sixth sense or, you know, unconventional skills that would maybe allow them to be used in possibly espionage operations, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had two, here's a classic example of two different agencies involved in one particular subject, not really knowing that, you know, the other one was involved in this particular area.
Now, did you say, and they had some success with it?
Oh, yes. For example, the dowsing using that the British police force used, they had a number of successes in finding dead bodies buried under rubble, and even one guy who was found in a river, and the dowser involved actually pointed to the location where supposedly the body was found. And I've got these files now, and they're interesting in the sense that, you know, they tell the story of the dowsing and the successes that were had. However, they also talk about what was going on behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
with the government saying, it's kind of, if you imagine, you know, it's written in sort of 60-year-old prose and text in a way that we don't necessarily speak today. But, you know, it talks about, should we be embracing the use of the paranormal at an mm-hmm. official level and things like that.
Yeah, see,
and there's a lot of concern about, you know, that they were delving into things like witchcraft and superstitions and mm-hmm. the occult. And the debate went up the chain of command to quite a high level in government as to whether or not, you know, the government should actually even be contemplating getting involved in these areas.
See, that's amazing to hear. I mean, I don't know what the truth is behind dowsing, but it's very much the point of why I was asking you that question is I kind of see that a lot also with other topics when it comes to like remote viewing. When the CIA yeah. did their remote viewing, they had success with that as well. And then it's like, well, they would just drop the research or drop the project and let it go and say, oh, no, it didn't, you know, it's not real and it yeah. doesn't work. And yet, you know, you reinforce it with, well, look, there's a lot of success here. And the same with other realms of quote unquote paranormal power, whatever you want to call it. It's amazing that they'll ignore that simply because it's the paranormal. They just don't want to touch it.
Yeah, I think actually it's two reasons. I fully agree with you on that, but I think one of the problems with things like remote viewing, ESP, however you want to term it, I'm firmly convinced that there actually is a reality to this phenomenon. But I think where it's kind of let down from particularly an intelligence or an espionage angle is that it isn't always 100% reliable.
Mm-hmm.
Or even those that have those skills, you know, sometimes the skills elude them. It just doesn't work on certain days or whatever. And I think, you know, that sort of thing frustrates the military. They know that, you know, barring some sort of mishap, a wiretap or an overflight by a spy plane, hopefully on every occasion, should provide the answers.
It'll work.
But
yeah.
But this thing, but RVing, you know, ESP, I think they realize that there's something to it, but it's hit and miss to where it's not a reliable issue all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it's the fear that something's going to be misinterpreted where, for the most part, you know, a bugged conversation or a high-power photograph of a new prototype aircraft on a runway isn't open to interpretation. And I think, you know, they possibly fall back more on the unconventional methods when the conventional ones fail,
mm-hmm.
but there's still that mindset of, you know, what if the guy just doesn't deliver the goods on this occasion, as has been the case previously. So in some respects, I can understand their approach. On the other hand, you know, I think that if more money was pumped into some of these projects at a public level, never mind, you know, behind the scenes, you know, we could perhaps have a very useful tool on our hands that's, you know, everyone could use if we could understand it and harness it, maybe.
Absolutely. Now, did the British government or military look into this topic as well?
Yeah, actually, somewhat coincidentally, just a few months ago, a couple of months ago, the Ministry of Defence declassified a formerly secret remote viewing project that they had initiated between 2001 and 2002.
That recent, huh?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
This has just been declassified. I've got a copy of the whole file. It's about 200 pages. And there are a number of deletions in there where the Ministry of Defense had sort of drawn targets or had photographs in their possession and, you know, kept them away from the eyes of the remote viewers and said, describe what we're looking at. And there's some indications that one of the pictures was a picture of Osama bin Laden. And, you know, it was quite clear that they were trying to see if remote viewers could find him, basically. There was also a picture of Mother Teresa. That was one of the pictures. And the report, the conclusions are that several of the remote viewers seem to be picking up on aspects of the photographs. There wasn't that sort of definitive, wow, you know, he's hit the nail on the head perfectly. That doesn't appear in these files.
Mm-hmm.
But there are references that have been declassified saying, well, you know, this person has actually hit on something. You know, he or she has picked up on something that is a key or an integral aspect of the picture or the photograph. But I think that they realize that, well, how can we harness this when we don't really understand it and it doesn't work every time? There have been rumors about previous remote viewing experiments undertaken by the Ministry of Defense. Those files as yet haven't surfaced. Now, whether they contain, you know, more intriguing information, and that's why they haven't surfaced, we don't know. But certainly there are rumors that these other files exist. But, you know, I'm kind of pleased that we're getting to see some of the files showing that things like remote viewing that were investigated in the US quite deeply and substantially were also undertaken in England at a similar level. So, you know, in the same way that in the US the Freedom of Information Act brought forth a trickle of files to start with and then many more, I wouldn't be at all surprised if a similar thing doesn't happen in England.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, I'm sure you've done this, you know, you go through a file and you see references in there that might allude to another file.
Yes.
So then you have to request that one, and that one may contain something else that you need to request something on. So it's kind of like a bit of detective work that, you know, the initial file may well lead to other things as well. So.
And I can't believe, though, that that the British government was doing this just in 2001, 2002. That's amazing to me. And it is very uplifting that maybe they are looking into alternative ways of finding people or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
It makes me pose the question of, I wonder why either they're not and or they haven't admitted to doing the same thing here in the States.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, the fact that, you know, you bring up a good point about the fact that the British Ministry of Defence were looking at this in 2001 and 2002. You know, I don't for one minute think the MOD didn't know what the Americans were doing back in the 70s.
Right.
I'm sure they were briefed. And if they were, to me, it would seem inconceivable that they wouldn't have thought, well, hang on, let's give it a go back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, it seems crazy the idea that they would have known 25 years ago that the CIA or the DIA were doing all these different experiments and decided in England not to do anything until 2001.
Mm-hmm.
That's what leads me to believe that we've just seen the newer files. We just haven't seen what went on before, so far at least, anyway.
And it seems like the British, to stay with the British government here, that they're being incredibly open in the last, five years or so. You mentioned the old 30-year rule where documents couldn't be declassified until they were after 30 years old. That, and help me out here, that is obviously not on the books anymore. They now have their own Freedom of Information Act in the UK. Is that correct?
That's correct. There is a Freedom of Information Act now, and it's actually brought forth a lot of files. And literally, in the last couple of weeks, the Ministry of Defence has announced that it's going to declassify about 7,000 pages of documents and put them on its website. And these originate with a department I mentioned earlier called the Defence Intelligence Staff. Now, these are sort of the highly trained experts in fields of scientific intelligence, technical intelligence, things like that, and, you know, military weapons systems, things like that as well.
Now, all 7,000 pages, just so I have this right, is on all sorts of topics or on...
This is just purely UFOs.
Purely UFO, gotcha. Great.
1977, I think, to the present day.
Wow.
And, you know, I suspect that, like a lot of the other files that have surfaced, we'll probably get to see, like a lot of the material over here, a lot of lights in the sky reports, but a number of intriguing military reports, radar cases, pilot interceptions, that sort of thing. And I think, you know, it's good that the MOD is releasing this material because I think, you know, they realize with people like the French releasing some of their files recently, mm-hmm. and the American Freedom of Information Act, that, you know, it makes sense for them to follow that suit. Otherwise, you know, there's just going to be claims and claims forever and a day about conspiracy and cover-up. And while I do believe that there has been a sort of a systematic conspiracy to hide certain aspects of the UFO subject in England, and I seriously doubt we'll get to see all the files, at least it's encouraging that some of this material is coming forward.
Do you think the US will follow suit?
Well, you know, I think one of the biggest problems, particularly with the UFO subject, is that I'm not entirely convinced that the official agencies like the CIA, the NSA, the DIA, really have access to, you know, the really important black box hidden information. I'm sure that certain people, you know, higher levels within these agencies have been briefed, but, you know, I suspect that somewhere within the infrastructure of U.S. intelligence, there probably is some sort of group, you know, whether an MJ-12 type organization that probably has access to the really hard information that nobody on the official side wants to see released. So I suspect that, you know, when we file requests with the known agencies, that yes, we get to see some intriguing material, but I'm not entirely sure that they're actually the keepers of the secret material that we're
right.
really looking for.
What's always amazing to me when I read through a lot of the documents that I've obtained, whether it be 2 years ago or 8 years ago, and even some that are coming in now, it's amazing to read those stories. They're not black and white proof that, quote unquote, aliens are above our heads. But when you read those stories and think to yourself, oh, my God, I can read this. I imagine what, you know, I can only imagine what I can't read. I can
yeah.
only imagine what
yeah.
they're covering up. Nick Redfern, stay tuned. Hold on, please. I'm sorry. And for all of you listening, stay tuned. We're going to wrap up this episode with Mr. Nick Redfern on the Black Vault Radio. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. This hour went way too quickly with Mr. Nick Redfern. We went all the way from the UFO topic to celebrity secrets to the UK government, the American government. Nick, it's been a very informative hour. Thank you so much. We've got only a couple of minutes left, and before the commercial break, you and I were talking a little bit about whether or not the U.S. government is going to follow suit. And, you know, it's one of those big debates, even right here on the Black Vault Radio. I've done it many times. Mr. Stephen Bassett is going to be joining me in a couple of weeks. It's a big debate because are they going to follow suit? Will they release their information? I personally don't see it happening. I think you and I are partially at least in agreement on that, that it's just not going to happen. I don't think they have to. And I think part of the reason is maybe they just don't want to admit that they don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe it's not this mass grand conspiracy that some people theorize. Maybe it's just the fear that the United States military, the United States government, that entity that wants to be number one, has to admit, we have no idea.
Yeah, I think there's actually a lot to that. I mean, people assume that if the government's hiding something, that it's hiding pickled aliens and dead bodies and, you know, crashed materials. It may well be. But, you know, if you think about it logically, having a crashed object and, you know, biological remains doesn't actually tell you what these things are, where they're from, or why they're here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there actually hasn't, if these things are real and they've crashed, but there's been no open contact, no open contact, that doesn't really give an answer as to what the motivations behind the presence is. So, you know, you're quite right. You could have all the physical materials in the world, but still be completely in the dark as to what's going on. And I suspect that, for the most part, that is the case. They know in the official world that there is a genuine UFO presence and that it seems to act in a covert fashion, that it's involved with us somehow with abductions, but it doesn't want to make itself known, and that there are a few disturbing aspects to the subject as well. And I suspect that suspecting this but not knowing it to, you know, the 100% of certainty is why there's a reluctance to reveal this material. You know, it's almost like, well, is it better to say nothing than to say, okay, we've got something, but we haven't really got a clue.
Right.
You know, no government, I think, really wants to take that approach. So, you know, I suspect they've got a lot of information, but maybe not many answers.
Yeah, and that's why we're in it, though. I mean, is because we, you know, we're trying to get those answers. Why is the biggest question? It is an unbelievable topic. Nick, just to wrap up real quick, you travel the world doing lectures. You're obviously a very intelligent and interesting speaker. Any coming up that we should know about?
I'm speaking at the Roswell UFO Festival in July to commemorate the 60th anniversary.
Great. See you there.
You'll be there. I think the website's ufofestival.com. I'll be speaking at a conference in Asheville, North Carolina in September called the Dark 30 Tour, and I'll be at Ryan Wood's Crashed UFO Conference in Las Vegas in November.
Fantastic. Nick, it has been such an informative hour. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Black Vault Radio. For all of those that are listening, if you want more information on Nick, all of his awesome books, I have many of which are I've read and they're in my archive, go to www.nickredfern.com. Again, www.nickredfern.com. Learn all about Nick, all of his books, direct links on how to order. Nick, thank you so incredibly much for your time. Again, one last time, what is the title of your newest book?
The new book's called Celebrity Secrets, Government Files on the Rich and Famous, and it's just packed with FBI surveillance files and scandals on all the famous stars of Hollywood from the 40s onwards.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to definitely track that down. Make sure all of those who are listening track it down, too. It is probably well worth it. I can't wait to see it. Nick, thanks again. We'll hopefully talk to you soon.
Thanks, John.
Thank you all for listening to the Black Vault Radio. We'll see you next time.